It's a pleasure to have you listening to my show today. My sincerest desire is for you to get something from it that will make your life richer, fuller, and, in this time of coronavirus pandemic, safer. I am Reverend Wynn Henderson. As an ordained Christian minister and a retired medical doctor, I have a dual perspective to bring you content to solve problems in your life. Freedom from Addiction and Share Your Mission is the longest-running, single-hosted, and produced, spiritually-based radio internet talk show in the country. It has been continuously running for the last 20 years. I introduce you to celebrities and non-celebrities alike who have something to say about the disease of addiction in its 30-plus different forms and about the importance of finding your mission or purpose in life and then acting on it. We bring you truth that's just below the surface. Articles appear frequently about individuals whose age is noted as a feature of their activism. But the activism of seniors as a growing and influential part of the population is often overlooked. The speed of change, the expansion of senior demographics, the growth of citizen participation, and a constant stream of visual images tell us that it's time to recognize how seniors are helping others and helping the world. They are putting in their time, energy, and passion into issues and causes, and they're making a difference. Politics aside, the consensus is that we are living in a time of tremendous change. Not only are traditionally trusted institutions and cultural mores being questioned and seriously challenged, we're in the midst of a global crisis. We all have a role to play. No surprise that individuals feel a need to do something, to get involved in the issues that concern them, and do their part in helping to advance humanity. My guest today is Thelma Reese. She is the author of The New Senior Woman and The New Senior Man, and is a blog creator at www.elderchicks.com. She's a retired professor of English and education, former spokesperson for Hooked on Phonics, and has long been active in national and Philadelphia-based educational and cultural initiatives. Her book is How Seniors Are Saving the World. Thelma, it's great to have you on the program today.
It's an honor to be with you, Doctor.
Give me a little bit more volume, Thelma. Okay. So, what inspired you to write your book?
Well, this is my third book, as you mentioned, and I am now 89. And I'm still working, as you can tell from that. And what inspired me was that I see peers, older people, ranging in the book from 60 to 95, who are doing things that say there is no such thing anymore as retirement. There is what I choose to call seniority. We reach a stage in life where we continue to grow. And while we're seeing all these things that need fixing, and want to be active in helping to fix them, whatever they are, we're also fixing ourselves when we do it. We're helping ourselves. We're finding our own purpose and meaning as we do these things. So it's really the inspiration that I see in other people.
Thelma, tell me about the people that you write about in your book. Basically, it's a book about stories and how you found them.
People range in age. from 60 to 95. Pardon me. And they range in other ways across all ethnic and religious lines. They come from different parts of the country, and they are a fascinating group, 24 of them. Each one is a chapter, and it was very easy to find these people. I could have found activists around the corner, in my own city, around the block. But instead, my co-author, B.J. Kittredge, and I felt it was very important to have people from all different parts of the country. So they are from the south and the west and the north and the east. And they are fascinating people. And the important thing is, too, for the reader, that at the end of every chapter in which the person we're talking about tells us in his or her own words what motivates them to work on what it is they're working on, we say how to connect with this person or with the cause. And so the reader can, if inspired to, get involved in whatever that person is involved in. So I think it's a valuable book for people in a practical sense in that way, but most importantly, in the sense that they'll see that it can happen anywhere, to anybody, from any walk of life, to find meaning in doing something that takes you outside of yourself and yet deeper into yourself at the same time.
So do you hope that readers of your book will get inspiration from listening to the stories of other senior citizens who have done something amazing and say, definitely, well, maybe I can do it too?
Definitely. And what seems amazing and often really is, even in an objective sense, can also be something that is very easy to do. I mean, activists are working all the time, and you could be an activist. I say right now, every senior who's wearing a mask and staying home is being an activist in this COVID-19 era, because we're doing the right thing and trying to save others as well as ourselves. And that's really the focus, is that you're concerned for others as well as yourself. And I think you do find things about yourself when you get involved in a cause.
I think I'll try to come back to COVID-19 at the end of the interview, because it's so, so very important. And not only from seniors doing the right thing, but every other person in the country doing the right thing. But we'll go on, and I will ask you about retirement. What are your feelings on retirement?
I want to get rid of the whole term. I don't want us to be talking about retirement anymore, and the reason is this. We no longer do that. The days of getting a gold watch after 25 or 35 years at the same firm are obviously over. And what it means is you just retire from one thing to something else in your life. You stop doing one thing, or you continue it in another way. But the point is, I would rather we call this time of life seniority. We've reached the stage where we can recognize our own strengths from our experience, all we've learned, and recognize that we still can learn and will.
Well, you know, I think that getting a college education is basically learning to learn for the rest of your life. No matter how many facts you put in your brain in 4 years, that's going to change because the science changes, the motivation of people changes, and if you think that you can learn something during the college years and that's it. You don't have to do anything else. You're sadly mistaken. So the people who continue to read, continue to think, continue to act are the people that will be able to do the best that they can with their life. And also, it helps them live longer.
And it makes the living longer so much more interesting. And we have to recognize how fortunate we are because as bad as things may seem, we have ways of communicating now and of learning information that didn't exist when we were younger. And it's absolutely marvelous. I mean, my children live on the West Coast, and I live in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Thank God I have a Zoom meeting with them every week, or I wouldn't be seeing them. And the ways that we can communicate and find information, if we just have a computer or simply an iPad, we can read if our vision is going. We can enlarge the print automatically. And I think that now that my physical vision is beginning to have some problems, my inner vision's getting a little better because I'm understanding what I'm reading. I'm able to really think about it critically and make informed decisions based on my own experience and all that I continue to learn through reading.
Well, that you've been in school for education and English, and so I think that you've gotten the real meat of the truth of the situation there. Now I want to ask you, basically, when you get old, you get discarded, and your relatives, perhaps, or your situation, puts you in a nursing home. It seems to me that that's quite a waste to just sit in a nursing home waiting to die. What do you think?
I couldn't agree more. My husband and I are fortunately still together after all these years, 64, and we still live in our house. We will make the adjustment that we need to, even if it means a stair lift, and we are blessed to be able to do it if we have to. But it's that interaction, not just with us, but with our neighbors, our neighborhood, are seeing what's going on in the world outside. You know, I have a little piece in the book about being in a senior bubble, and nursing homes are like that. Even if you're well taken care of, in every way that they possibly can take care of you, you are in a bubble. You are no longer stimulated in the same ways, and what you have to give is being wasted on the world and yourself.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. It's a waste of humanity to lock somebody up in that bubble. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about ageism. Ageism is counterproductive. Can you give us a little statistical information or your own personal experience why that's the case?
Well, it is counterproductive, but you know, we're in a period of such tremendous change. I don't know that anything we say will really be really still be relevant in a year from now, which is shocking to me to realize the rate of change that's going on. This is a time of all times when ageism is, it's just a terrible waste of talent and experience and wisdom. Fortunately, I do see some light at the end of the tunnel. I'm working on an intergenerational course with Temple University now. 19-year-old on our committee from Canada who got to know us because he heard me talking about ageism in a webinar on positive aging in New York that he tuned into because he's so interested in older people and what they're thinking and doing. So I'm seeing some light here, Doctor, where people are recognizing that ageism is as stupid as all the other isms that we're dealing with now. Sexism, racism, judging people on some particular feature that is really irrelevant to the intelligence and wisdom and motivation that they bring to a situation.
In the Asian countries, age is respected a lot more than it is in the United States.
Absolutely.
And older people are revered in their society.
Oh, yes. In Japan, there is even a national holiday called Respect for Ages Day. Now that their families have grown so small, that may change in the next few years. But it's still a national holiday. My mother lived to be 97, and when many Chinese people moved into her building, she lived on her own, near me, but on her own, she was so happy. She said, "Thelma, oh, all these lovely Chinese people are moving in, and you know how they feel about the old."
Right.
Made her very happy. She knew she'd be respected.
Well, I don't know what the difference between cultures is. I just know that it exists. So it would be nice if Americans would get some of the wisdom from the Japanese and try to put it into their lives too.
I think so.
Now, volunteerism is another subject that everybody talks about. Why do you think that it's really important in the older people to have a sense of volunteerism?
Well, I do think it's important. And America, by the way, does have a wonderful record of volunteerism. And just as we have of individual giving donations to charities, we are perhaps not in education, definitely not in education, but in volunteerism and in giving to charities, we are ranked very high in the world. So we do have a tradition of volunteerism. I think that is kind of losing its shine in a way, instead of being thought of as activism. And it's often exactly the same thing, depending on whom you're talking about. It's just a different term. But the idea of activism suggests more that the person is putting what I like to call also in the book, skin in the game. You've got an axe to grind that you're working on, and perhaps it just assumes more passion unfairly because people who have been volunteering all their lives have indeed often really been true activists.
Thelma, give our listeners a kind of a concise book report. Tell them what's inside your book and how you set it up and a little bit about the book itself.
I think that readers are enjoying it because they can pick it up and put it down, read a chapter a night, pardon me, and get to know these fascinating people. We learned so much from the people who are in the book. You learn from people who walk, or from every walk of life. A couple of the people have come from other countries to America and love it dearly and have given so much here. They range, I think, when you read about a man who's in his 90s now and still flying his own plane down to the border in San Francisco to work with children who have been separated from their parents through no fault of their own. It's inspiring. I think when you read about a woman who literally has no money, who also literally built and used kitchen at Standing Rock so that older people would get fed early who needed to be. I think people like this enlarge our own lives. These are not people we would meet every day. And some of them are people that we think we would meet every day and don't realize what they're doing. There is a man in the book whom I met several years ago who is literally... He was an engineer, by the way, on one of the towers on 9/11, and also a hero there, saving many lives. But he is devoting his life to recording, collecting and recording 7 billion, that's with a B, acts of goodness, because he feels that that will somehow tip the balance in the world.
If he writes it down, that's going to be a big book.
Big book.
Okay, tell our audience how that they can get a copy of your book, or whether or not you have a website that they can go to. If you take questions, whether or not you have an email that you answer questions. Just give us a kind of a little... description of how people can get in touch with you and learn more about you.
Well, I'd love to hear from people. I'm happy to. We have many hundreds of readers and usually at least a dozen or so writers every month on elderchicks.com, all one word. And they will be able to write to me there too. They can look up Thelma Reese. If they forget the name of the book or the name of Elder Chicks, if they just Google Thelma Reese, they'll find all this. There's a website called senioractivism.com, and that has copies of many articles and podcasts and interviews of mine and B.J. Kittredge, my partner. And... they can, of course, order the book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It's called How Seniors Are Saving the World. And we know the world needs saving, but so do we. And so it's really good to be able to do both at the same time.
Absolutely.
Save the world and save ourselves.
Absolutely.
Find our own meaning and purpose. And realize how much of a difference we can make.
Can you put into words what exactly is your purpose in life now?
I think this has been a time for tremendous change and contemplation, forced contemplation, by staying in so much. And I realized every day some changes, and I realized that much of my focus has become recognizing the example that all of us as we age serve for people who are younger, not just our own children and grandchildren, but other young people. I've been so moved by this 19-year-old in Canada who found what I said inspiring enough to get involved with Temple University here in Philadelphia. And he is brilliant and recognize sometimes that we really are examples, role models for people who are younger. So I think that I recognize that my purpose now is to be able to continue to age in a way that says you can still grow, you matter. In many ways, you matter in ways that you never knew you would. And sometimes you don't even get to find out, but they're there.
You know, I've got the longest running spiritually based radio internet talk show in the country, perhaps in the English speaking world, and I've been at it for over 20 years. And my mission is to help people primarily get rid of their addictive behaviors, which is killing them in various ways. But I don't plan on quitting, and I plan on living to 100. So that gives me another 30 years of doing this job.
Well, to me, of course, you're still very young. Now that I just turned 89, I think it's so wonderful. What you do is so wonderful. And, of course, you must never quit.
No, I'm going to be on the radio the day before they put me in the box. Okay, so I said that I wanted to talk a little bit about COVID because it's the most important, critical thing that we've got going on in this country today.
Yes, and, absolutely.
And I have been trying to find the truth just below the surface. And there's a problem here. For whatever reason, be it political, be it money, be it fame, glory, whatever, the answer to this problem is being not put out to the public. There's misinformation being put out to the public. And here it is. There is a drug that is being used in other countries over the counter. You don't have to have a prescription for it. And it is effective. I know of just two doctors that I've talked to, that between the two of them, in their clinics, they've treated 1,000 patients. And none of these patients get sick and go to the hospital. So when they say, well, we're not promoting it because this, that, and the other is not effective, I guarantee you, if you're in the hospital on a respirator and you've got a low PO2, you're going to die, most likely, and it's not going to be effective. But the critical point that people are missing, and I don't know what the reason is for it, but there's a blowback at all different kinds of levels of using hydroxychloroquine. And it's a safe drug, it's a cheap drug, and it's a drug that can save 1,000 patients a day's life in this country. I had a guest on from Yale University just this week who estimated that if hydroxychloroquine was given widespread, that we would save between 75,000 and 100,000 lives. And the death rate, according to media, is up to 150,000 now, or somewhere in that neighborhood. And it's continuing, and it's probably going to get worse. And for them to hide this information is criminal, in my estimation. And, but there are some young people that are doing what they can to get it out. It's harder for us old people to get it out. I've been trying. But I want everybody that's listening today to go over to my free podcast. And I'm going to tell you in a minute, so get your pen, what to write down to put in your address line of your telephone or your computer. And listen to some of the interviews that I have done so far. and I am going to continue to get more of them, because hydroxychloroquine can be the answer to ending the epidemic. Now, my podcast is www.freedomfromaddiction.libsyn, L-I-B as in boy, S-Y-N.com. No spaces, all lowercase. And I've got information in there so that if you get sick, or someone in your family gets sick, or just someone you know, they don't have to die. The information is in there how they can save their lives. So I'm really pleading with everybody that is listening to this interview today to go over to my podcast and read the various stories and podcasts that I have on there. And I thank you for letting me break into your thing, which is very important also. But this is critical that people find out that there is a plan, that if you do it early, you don't have to get sick and die. So, what else could I give you an opportunity to say that I haven't given you an opportunity so far? Do you have something else that you want to say?
Well, I just want to say that I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and to your audience, and I appreciate the work that you do, and I hope that listeners who I assume are, among whom I assume are many older people, think, as I'm sure they already do, but if they do, think more about what it is that they bring to the world, what they can do, what makes the world better, what makes us all better, what unites us rather than divides us. And I would hope that the older that we get, the more we understand each other, and the more loving we become with each other. I think that we lost a great example of that in John Lewis. And I hope that we all can honor the memory of someone who gave his life that way, lived his life that way, by being better ourselves, and being better to each other.
And I'm going to just make one other statement, since this is a program about seniors. If you've got a relative that's in a nursing home, you might think about getting them on hydroxychloroquine prophylactically before they get COVID. And they can take this inexpensive, safe, cheap drug, and perhaps they won't die in that nursing home. So that's my parting comment, and Thelma, it's really great to have you on the program today and to tell about how seniors are saving the world.